Blog Talk Radio.
I got a letter from the government the other day. I opened and read it and burned that. Man, the way that I live don't concern that. Man, we gon' have to settle this another way. A letter from the government the other day. I opened and read it and burned that. Man, the way that I live don't concern that. Man, we gon' have to settle this another way.
Movement, music, move into it. Put a fist up, prove it to us. This is much more than music to us. This is beauty and strength. And if you know about the music, then you know about life. This is movement, music, move into it. Put a fist up, prove it to us. This is much more than music to us. This is beauty and strength. And if you know about the music, then you know about life.
Word is
any kind of activity that takes place on the floor of the Congress or the Senate, that's the government. Any kind of dilly-dallying, that's the government. Any kind of pussyfooting, that's the government. Any kind of act that's designed to delay, or deprive you and me right now of getting full rights, that's the government that's responsible. And any time you find the government involved in a conspiracy,
turn, I can never go back. Life without parole, upstate, shackled and trapped. Living in the hole, looking at the world through a crack. Fuck that, I'd rather shoot it out and get clapped. I've gone too far, there ain't no coming back for me. Auschwitz gas chamber full of Zyklon B. Just like the Spanish exterminating Tainos, raping the black and Indian women, creating Latinos. Motherfucker upmade me out of self-righteous hatred. And now you got yourself a virus, stuck in the matrix. A suicide bomber, strapped and ready to blow. Lethal injection, strapped down, ready to go. Don't you understand, they'll never let me live out in peace. Concrete jungle, guerrilla war out in the streets. Nat Turner with the sickle, pitchfork and machete. The end of the world, motherfucker, you not ready.
DJ Tony Drake.
This is DJ Tony Drake, a.k.a. Mr. Top Shelf himself. And right now, you're in tune to Your World News, where journalism and activism are not mutually exclusive. Here on yourworldnews.org.
You can't tell me life was meant to be like this. A black man in a world dominated by whiteness ever since the Declaration of Independence. We've been easily brainwashed by just one sentence. It goes, all men are created equal. That's why corrupt governments kill innocent people. With chemical warfare, they created crack and AIDS. Got the public thinking these were things that black folks made. And every time there's violence shown in the media, usually it's a black thing. So where are they leading you? To a world full of ignorance, hatred and prejudice. TV and the news for years they have fed you this foolish notion that blacks are all criminals, violent lowlifes, and then even animals. I'm telling the truth, so some suckers are fearing me, but I must do my part to combat the conspiracy.
Welcome to another edition of Your World News. I'm your host, Solomon, and today, July 12th, 2012, we've got an exclusive show today, very important interview. We're going to have two members of the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement, including Rosa Clemente, who is a human rights and hip-hop activist, and she's also the former vice presidential candidate and nominee, vice presidential nominee for the Green Party in 2008, and I am happy to say that I voted for Rosa as well as Cynthia McKinney. And we're also going to be joined by Ajamu Baraka, who is the founding executive director of the Human Rights Network from July 2004 to June 2011. And he's a human rights defender whose experience spans three decades of domestic and international education and activism. And as I said before, both are members of the Malcolm X grassroots movement. And the reason we're having them on the program today is we're going to be discussing this very, very important report that was just put out by Malcolm X grassroots movement. And it's one of these reports that you've heard me say on this show, these are the kind of reports that more and more of our organizations, you know, our progressive radical organizations from the black community need to be put out there. The same way you have the regressive, you know, right wing think tanks such as Brookings and Cato and the Heritage Foundation putting out their so-called white papers that play a major role in influencing public policy and overall public consent. Well, these are the kind of reports, the one that was just done by Malcolm X grassroots movement, and I'll discuss that in one moment. This is one of the most important reports that I've ever read, and it's a painful read, but it's an important read. And I say painful because it details that from January 1st, 2012, from January 1st, 2012 to June 30th, 2012, the report details that there were 110 extrajudicial killings of black people in America. It's called the Report on the Extrajudicial Killings of 110 Black People in America from January 1st to June 30th, 2012. And I went through, I scoured every single page of the report, detailed. It's well put together. You can find it on, you know, just by Googling Malcolm X grassroots movement, going there, and it will jump right out at you when you go right on the site. And we're going to discuss that. We're going to discuss that and what this means, you know, when discussing human rights. We're going to discuss solutions and how do we move forward. Now that we have, you know, such a report, and the report basically, you know, substantiates what most people of color know especially inner city and economically depressed or governmentally neglected communities in America know that this is a police state that disproportionately affects people of color. You know, mostly black people in the United States of America, where it's police brutality. And what the report also details is that 86% of the cases, 86% of the 110 cases that are detailed in this report, found that the police were without a question of doubt using excessive force. They were using excessive force. So in that vein, when we're talking about a police state, I want to play this Black Agenda Report clip, and then on the other end, we'll come back to the conversation. And if you want to call in, the call-in number, as you know, is 347-945-5191. That's 347-945-5191. Once again, this is Your World News.
The Obama administration is methodically erecting the legal structures of a police state. The president late last year smoothed the way for bipartisan passage through Congress of a preventive detention bill that is so vaguely worded, a federal judge in New York last week ruled that it's likely to be successfully challenged on constitutional grounds. And in Richmond, Virginia, a three-judge appeals court heard Justice Department lawyers argue that reporters can be compelled to reveal the identities of whistleblowers in so-called national security cases. The government is prosecuting a former CIA officer, Jeffrey Sterling, for allegedly leaking secret documents to a New York Times investigative reporter named James Risen. The ex-spy is accused of showing the reporter documents on the agency's campaign of sabotage against Iran's nuclear research program, information the reporter later used to write a book. In both cases, the Obama legal team has been single-minded in its determination to make political dissent a crime. The judge in the preventive detention proceeding repeatedly asked the government to explain, specifically, how or if the seven plaintiffs might be detained under the wording of the National Defense Authorization Act, which makes it a crime to provide substantial support to groups associated with Al-Qaeda. The plaintiffs, including former New York Times correspondent Chris Hedges, academic activist Noam Chomsky, and Pentagon Papers leaker Daniel Ellsberg, wanted to know exactly what the terms substantial support and associated groups meant, and if their actions as journalists, authors, activists, and just plain citizens made them vulnerable to detention without trial. Obama's lawyers refused to explain, as if the vague and highly interpretable language spoke for itself. What they were trying to create is a legal trap so vague and amorphous that it can ensnare almost anyone opposed to Washington's foreign policies. The New York federal judge refused to accommodate the government's lawyers and allowed the plaintiffs legal standing to sue. The Richmond Federal Appeals Court is being asked to recognize the government's contention that reporters who receive secret government documents are not protected as journalists because they are witnesses to a crime. One of the judges pressed the prosecutor to explain how the public's interest in the maintenance of a free press might be outweighed by the specific circumstances of the case. Obama's lawyers refused to explain, claiming there was no need to balance constitutional issues because the reporter was the only witness to a crime. Receiving secret government documents, he said, is the same as receiving illegal drugs. The Obama legal doctrine seems to be that whatever the government does not want the public to see is criminal. Having knowledge of government wrongdoing is criminal in the eyes of this administration. President George Bush may have felt that way too, but Obama will go down in history as the major architect to date of the evolving American police state. He has already prosecuted more whistleblowers than all his presidential predecessors combined, and is the first chief executive to arm himself with a preventive detention law. And to think, Angela Davis says Obama identifies with the historical black radical tradition. In reality, he has much more in common with the traditions of fascism. For Black Agenda Radio, I'm Glenn Ford. On the web, go to blackagendareport.com.
And the analysis just simply doesn't get much better than that. It simply does not get much better than what Glenn Ford, just elaborated on. And that's the perplexing thing with activists like myself and other folks that are involved in Your World News is that, when looking at, President Barack Obama and the things that he has done and continues to do, it's amazing that he continues to do these things with, a black populace, that largely is in support of what he's doing, or at the very least complicit with what he's doing. So we talk about NDAA. I mean, you talk about the police state that Obama is continuing to expand. You look at the Byrne Act that he supported, that he signed off on, which his predecessor George Bush initiated, the Byrne Act, and how that helps embolden the police state. And this is just, we're just looking at things domestically before we even get to the expansive wars that Obama has conducted, throughout Central Asia, throughout North Africa. Remember, he initiated the bombing of Libya, which is a North African nation. It is not in the Middle East. It is in Northern Africa. And bombed it, under the pretense the lies that were put out there. They knew that they were putting out lies, but they knew the American public was going to buy it hook, line, and sinker, putting out the narrative that Gaddafi was slaughtering, you know, his own civilians, his own citizens, and was preparing to slaughter more. To this date, and first of all, the media put that out there as well. And to this date, it is never that has never been proven. So they were able to put things out there that are virtual lies. All right, there was never ever to this date right now, July 12, 2012. To this date, there has been no evidence whatsoever to corroborate that story that Gaddafi was massacring, you know, civilians. But beyond that, you know, we have masses and masses of black folks that are complicit with supporting Obama, no matter what narrative is put out there. And so when you have individuals like myself and like Rosa Clemente and so many other folks and like the Glenn Fords who will detail everything that points towards Obama not just being a warmonger but being a strong supporter of a police state. He has completely continues to be an affront to the black community, and the black community continues to take it hook, line, and sinker. And that's one of the most disconcerting things. But the work goes on. The work goes on. And with that being said, with the Black Agenda Report update from Glenn Ford, we're going to bring in, as I said before, I'm very pleased to have, you know, two members of Malcolm X Grassroots Movement coming on the program in just a couple moments. Rosa Clemente, who I said before, is a human rights and hip-hop activist, and she's the former vice presidential candidate and nominee for the Green Party in 2008. And I'm proud to have given her and Cynthia McKinney my vote, two women of color. It says a lot about the Green Party to have the two of them representing the party, and I'm glad to have voted for them and to have a clear conscience knowing that my vote did not go towards Barack Obama and certainly not John McCain. And we're also joined by Ajamu Baraka, who is the founding executive director of the U.S. Human Rights Network from July 4th to June 2011, and he's a human rights defender whose experience spans three decades of domestic and international education and activism. And his perspective is going to be real, very crucial in this as we deconstruct this report. As I said, the report from the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement that reports on the extrajudicial killings of 110 black people from January 1st, 2012 to June 30th, 2012. And without further ado, I'd like to welcome, you know, both of our special guests onto the program. Can you both hear me well?
Yes.
Yes, I can.
How are you doing? Rose, if I can, actually, I would start with both of you. I want to get both of your takes. If we could start, I guess, from point one, if you could detail the findings of this report, because I just gave the audience a kind of a small snapshot, but if you can detail the findings of this report and its potential ramifications in terms of what it really says about life in America for black people.
I'll let Ajamu, you know, go first and detail that for you.
Okay.
Well, I think what the report clearly reflects is that there is a pattern and practice of discrimination directed toward members of the African-American community. It indicates that there are well over 110 lives that we said have been stolen as a consequence of actions by representatives of the police department, security guards, and even vigilantes. It reflects that a number of the victims were under 18 years of age. It breaks down the age categories of the other victims. It suggests that Many of these shootings occurred as a consequence of the reckless use of deadly force after individuals were racially profiled and stopped, usually for not doing anything that could be conceived as illegal. It indicates that in those cases where even when the authorities themselves will concede that there were questionable circumstances, there's been a failure to properly investigate and to prosecute those incidents where people have found themselves with their lives taken from them. So it's a damning report that indicates that someplace in this country, every 36 to 40 hours, some African-American is losing their lives at the hands of either police, security guards, or even vigilantes.
Right. Thank you. Rosa?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think this report is, as Ajamu rightly put it, it is a damning report. I think it's something all of us who are activists, especially against parts or all of the prison industrial complex or the police state or the militarized or the how the police are being militarized. You know, we know that this happens, but I think this is the first report that clearly has the research and the findings and many of the families, we know who they are as well. You know, and I think that number, people have to realize it's 110 on June 30th, the report span January to June 30th. We could potentially be looking at four more killings that have happened post July 1st that our researcher, you know, is going to obviously put together. But when you think about it, it is every 36 to 40 hours, every less than 2 days. And one of the cases that just happened in Detroit of this young sister that was at a party, the police officer said that they were hugging and the gun accidentally went off. And the mother from the beginning said she did not believe that story at all. And already, you know, there's a lot of holes in that story. I think that's critical. I think another thing that's important about this, but it's also potentially going to double these numbers, is when we're specifically talking about blacks that are ethnically African-American, you know. So when we end up adding others, particularly Latino or Latinas, whether they be documented or undocumented, these numbers could double. And it's not even that we're in a state of emergency. I mean, we've been at that state of emergency for so long. Is that we don't know, for the most part, our community does not know this is happening. People in your listening area might not know that four of these cases come from Baltimore alone, you know, in Prince George County. So, you know, I think this report is really shaking up a lot of people. It's waking up people to the fact that there's an institution that, you know, that, I mean, you know, this is institutionalized, but also, well, I think people have to think about, too, because you were talking about President Barack Obama, is that there's been nothing. There's nothing coming from the administration. Even if they were aware of this, do we think that he would even address this issue? And I think that's important for people to remember as they go to the polls in November and feel like they only have that choice, you know. Yeah. That's just something that I wanted to highlight.
Right, and I'm glad you brought that up, Rosa, you know, because it reminds me of when the U.S. puts out the pretext that, you know, to justify going into another nation and bombing, they'll often put out, and oftentimes it's false, as we saw with Libya, saying that Gaddafi was massacring, you know, civilians, and that's never been proven. But when you look at these numbers, these are numbers that if they were legitimately coming from another country, you know, the U.S. would, you know, would put this out there. And so, I you know, it would hearken to me that you know, black people in this country need their own intervention, but obviously the U.S. would not not employ that kind of rhetoric in any shape, form, or fashion. And you mentioned the institutionalization, which makes me think of the conference that you were at in Durban in 2001, where it was the Durban conference on racism, and Bush at that time he declined in sending a U.S. delegation to that conference, but then Obama has gone ahead and followed suit and declined in sending a delegation to a conference addressing institutional racism. And so,
it was the United Nations Conference Against Xenophobia and Racism in 2001 in Durban, South Africa. There was a delegation there representing the U.S. Colin Powell was there. The U.S. delegation walked out. People say around the Palestinian issue, as someone that was part of the reparations youth committee and someone that was there when the conference passed the declaration that slavery was a crime against humanity, and there was also another collective from the United States called the Durban 400. I just wanted to just let people know that, because that's a critical conference that happened where you saw worldwide global solidarity against xenophobia and institutionalized racism, where you saw Palestinian people being able to come from people from Puerto Rico, where you begin to also see emergence of an Afro-Latino political worldwide movement that Ajamu is right now on the ground with, as it relates to what's happening to blacks in Latin America, in Colombia, in Peru, what's happening in Puerto Rico, where we have over 1,700, 10% of the police force in Puerto Rico is under indictment or has been arrested in the last 2 years for corruption. And the police brutality, particularly against the students in Puerto Rico, was massive. And I think it's important for us to look at this report, and then we can also look at Puerto Rico as a colony of the United States and clearly see that these people do not value our humanity. And I think one of the things that the report shows is that, well, not the report itself shows, but what I like to remind people basically is that for these 110 people that lost their lives like this, there's 110 families that have been shattered. There are brothers and who have seen, like Lamarley Graham, his five-year-old brother saw him shot dead in his house, in his grandmother's bathroom. And, we're talking about shattering so many lives and so many of these families. All they want is justice. Sometimes all they want is the truth about what happened to their son or daughter, their loved one. And I think framing it in a human rights political and bringing all the politics of the human rights movement is important. And part of that human rights movement is that there's a lot of people that are suffering the loss of someone that they love.
Right. Thank you for pointing that out, that they walked out. Am I clear, though, since that conference, the U.S. has declined to send any more delegates to that conference, because I think that they had a follow-up to that?
The follow-up one, Ajamu might expand on this, but Barack Obama did not send anybody from the administration. But
thank you. And Ajamu, as you expand on that, can you also speak on, since you're an expert in human rights, can you speak on the broader implications of what this report means to when we closely look at it, examine the U.S. and moving forward with the important data from this report?
Well, I think you touched on it in your question your comment when you said that the U.S. Will use the justification of human rights abuses in order to violate the sovereignty of another nation. By invading that country in order to protect a threatened population. This report clearly indicates that there is, in fact, a human rights crisis in the U.S. And we see that because we are not getting a lot of coverage from the mainstream media, no real response from the administration, it just illustrates the cynical hypocrisy when it comes to the idea of human rights and the way it's used by by this particular government and even this particular administration. So the implications are that we have a crisis, and that, as you said, if these were numbers coming from someplace else, they indicated that a particular population was being subjected to militarized violence from the state, resulting in the loss of life of this particular population. Many people around the world would agree that there was, in fact, a human rights issue within this country. But because this is happening in the center of the global empire, the U.S., and because of the power of the media corporations and the ability of the government to filter information, this information is not coming out. And it's important for it to come out for various reasons. But one particular reason I want to go back to is a comment that DeRosa made about how people are directly experiencing these things in their communities, and they are. What this report does, though, is that it demonstrates that what people are experiencing in their communities that sometimes might seem unique to their particular area, besides one or two major cases that will come out, like a Sean Bell or Oscar Grant. What this case clearly indicates is that there is, in fact, a pattern of these abuses, a consistency of these abuses across the country,
right.
That this is a systematic behavior, that black communities across the country are being subjected to this kind of abuse. So we have a real crisis, and as human rights defenders, our responsibilities, you know, are to frame it as such and to try to break through the media barriers. Coming on shows like this, where you have a constituency, where you are committed to the truth and disseminating the truth and alternative information, to try to get this information to the masses of our people.
Yeah, and I think the media piece is so critical, right, because 4 years after having been part of an electoral political process as a candidate, it's gotten worse, you know, in terms of not only the mainstream media, but the so-called progressive media. You know, I mean, this is a story that should be in all the outlets that we support as progressive folks, right? And, well, let me call myself, I'd rather call myself a radical or a total black left person, because these progressive media aren't picking up on the report either, right? And I think a lot of that speaks to how in the last 4 years, with having a president, Barack Obama, having this Democratic administration, a lot of people are lost, they're confused. You know, they think that the only way to solve any problem is through, like, a federal administration, a president doing something, or even, you know, some politicians that are not even willing to look at this report. This report is over 35 pages long. It was not done by a nonprofit. It was really done between two and three people, you know, supported, obviously, through the organization Malcolm X Grassroots Movement. And, I mean, you know, we've had no resources to do this, which obviously speaks to the collective genius amongst all of us. But what it really says is, what are these institutions that call themselves progressive, label themselves as such, or come after us as black or Puerto Rican or Latino radical or left folks when they have a specific issue that they want to push? And then we put out a report, and the response is as negligible as the response from the mainstream media, you know. So that's important, and it's important to be on stations and radio shows like yours, because we understand that the community is not only listening, but the community is probably supporting some of those other progressive stations that to this day, you know, have not had one of us on or have even mentioned the report. We have to break that barrier, and we have to figure out, you know, how we're going to do that.
That's right, and I couldn't agree more. That was one of the noticeable things I noticed about the or paid observation to when it comes to the so-called progressive media, you know, such as, and I'll name folks like Democracy Now, you know, that, you know, even they took the same narrative that the corporate media was taking when it came to Libya. You know, and with this, I went through every single page. I was up till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning last night, scouring through every single page of this report. And to me, it's deplorable that so-called progressive media outlets have not touched this at all, because the stuff that's within this, I mean, it is without a doubt widespread, and it has the markings of all over it of a national crisis, of a complete national crisis. And so I wanted to kind of ask you about some of the stuff that I went through that jumped out of me in the report. Could you talk about the fact that what percentage of the cases were found to have noticed that excessive force was used, and then also how many of the cases were the murderers, the police or the so-called law enforcement, were actually charged of their crimes of murder?
The crimes of the second part, Ajama might know that by hand, off memory, but I know that the first question, excessive force, is 86%. I know that's excessive force was used in 86% of the cases. As the second part of the question, Ajama might know a little bit more than me.
Yeah, I think that at this point we only have information that about three policemen have been charged. One for vehicular homicide and two for manslaughter. So out of the 110, we only are aware of at this point three prosecutions, which is consistent with what has been surfaced in some other reports that are similar to this report. Not as comprehensive, but there have been some reports that have come out that have indicated that within the information that is that can be surfaced, and I say surfaced because it's very difficult to get information on the number of not just police killings, but the numbers of individuals who file complaints against the police, who have been abused physically, who have been tortured. It is very difficult to get that information, and the federal government has not put pressure on local governments to, in fact, compile this information, or nor has the federal government attempted to compile it themselves, besides one attempt they made back in 2002, even though they have been required to do so as signatories to the International Convention to eliminate all forms of racial discrimination. You know, the information we do have is that basically there's a very small percentage of these police forces, these police individuals, who end up being prosecuted for excessive force.
And rare, you know, and history also shows rarely, even if indicted, even if it goes to trial, I'm going to gather that 99% will never see, will never be incarcerated, will never serve time. Some of them get their jobs back. Some of them become firemen, like in the case of the Amadou Diallo shooting, while almost over a decade ago in the Bronx. I happened to organize in Albany, New York. It was one of my first organizing efforts as a young activist, and I was there when the verdict came down. I saw those four officers walk out. I saw them an hour later in a restaurant with windows having champagne with the judge, with all of us who were protesting. And I saw the community response the next day all over the country, particularly in New York. And that was a decade ago. And in most of these cases, you know, we have to look at why are we not organizing? What's happening that we're not even able to come in masses like this to demand a response? In fact, a lot of people had to get arrested for the indictments just to happen, and then they ended up moving the trial from the Bronx to Albany, New York. So in the case of the Romali Graham, which was one of the cases that Ajamu is talking about the officer was charged with manslaughter, that could mean nothing. What if they move the trial again from the Bronx or something like that? So I think it's critically important that as people read this report, that they look at why we're demanding a plan of action, right? Because we need to figure out how to stop this, how we're going to organize around it. And I think one of the most powerful images of the report, because I really want people to download it and read it, is the states, the image of where you see the United States map in the different colors. And you see that at least in 20 states, right, there's been these killings. Some states we might not know. Some states have a very small black population. Like Ajamu said, we might not know if there's been police brutality, a stop and frisk type of situation. They were beaten, but they survived, you know. So I think, you know, we're pointing these things out because sometimes people don't want to read reports, right? They're not readable. They may be too academic. This is a report for the people. And it clearly also shows the charting of every case and what has happened, and as much information as we know as of this moment.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's a very, very readable report, and you know, especially like the first several pages, and then you know you get through the compelling data that actually has the names and the circumstances, and you know whether you know the person was known to have a weapon or not, and I saw that 47 of the cases, people definitively had no weapon, and then there were 40 where it was alleged by the police that they had weapons. In one case, it was a cane, a toy gun, BB gun, and this, you know, and for the folks that want to hold out, you know, to hold out reservation with Barack Obama, thinking that this is some kind of importance, we have to remember that it was in 2008 when Arthur Cooperman in New York laid out his amoral verdict, you know, and acquitted the police that killed Sean Bell, that shot him, you know, I think it was 50 times. It was candidate Barack Obama that when asked his opinion on that, he said that America is a land of just laws and we need to respect the verdict of the judge. And so I the question I was going to ask both of you is, in light of what I just said, and do you think that the Justice Department might touch this report in any shape, form, or fashion?
Well, it doesn't, if I can jump in, it doesn't really matter if they touch it or not at this point.
Right.
What we're going to do is to call on the Civil Rights Division of the Justice Department to, in fact, look into these cases, because it's their responsibility. How they respond to that would be on them, of course. But our responsibility is to surface the information, to expose this pattern and practice that's taking place across this country, and to demand that there is attention devoted to this ongoing crisis. We're going to definitely engage the administration. We're going to remind them of their responsibilities, not only under the U.S. Constitution, but also their responsibilities as a consequence of them being part and party of various human rights instruments that, in fact, require this kind of investigation. And, in fact, we're going to remind them that a number of U.N. human rights entities, including the Human Rights Council, the CERD Committee, which is the committee that is over the Convention Against All Forms of Racial Discrimination, have cited the U.S. on more than one occasion for their failure to prevent the very kinds of incidents that we have detailed in this report. So they have been cited for more than a decade now for not doing more to prevent the killings of African people in this country. And so we're going to remind them that they have been cited and that they have a responsibility to finally put in place, theoretically, remedies for this situation.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Rosa. You can...
Oh, no, I mean, Ajamu later that I was going to bring up something different, but I can wait. Go ahead.
And my question is one of the things that I really, really liked about the report was the fact that there's a lot of solutions-oriented prescriptions within the report, and I wanted to know if you would care to discuss some of those, and, you know, because some of them, you know, were geared around, you know, the community, you know, coming up with alternative community-centered responses, because in one of the cases, it was a sister who was in New York City and had some mental issues, and the police came and they beat her down and they ended up suffocating her, I believe, with a pillow, and she's no more. And you know, the police, you know, were called, you know, as a response to, you know, some issues that I guess, you know, came about, you know, by and large, you know, through her mental challenges or what have you. And you
yeah,
know,
that's what I wanted to talk about before we, you know, and have Ajamu lay out, you know, this demand that we're calling this National Plan of Action for Racial Justice.
Sure.
But, you know, I think this report is also very different for one specific reason. This is a report that is gendered. We have not seen a report where we talk about African American men and women, right? Because the narrative for so long, and the majority, are black men being killed, you know, but increasingly women are being killed, and most of those women, they cite some type of mental health illness. Cherise Francis, the sister you talked about in New York, the family had called for medical assistance. We've seen that story before, you know, where the family calls for help, and then their loved one, because of mental health, is killed. Also in Las Vegas, the sister Charmelle Edwards, the single mother, she worked with disabled children. She was distraught over breaking up with her boyfriend. The police said they tried to negotiate with her, and that, you know, she was just not in a mentally good state, and she was sitting in the car for 20 minutes, and she came out with a cane. They said it was a gun, and they shot her. The thing about this case, and we're seeing this more and more, is that this officer was the second killing that he had on his record. So he had already killed somebody, and he was back out there. And we see a recent case like that that's getting a lot of national coverage, the Kenneth Chamberlain case, which is not in this report because it happened in the fall of 2011 in White Plains, New York, in Westchester County. Kenneth Chamberlain was a 65-year-old veteran. He was in his house. His medical alert button went off by accident. He specifically said he didn't need help. The police broke in. I mean, but they were there for hours. And for over an hour, you can hear him saying, "Leave me alone. I'm fine. Leave me alone. They're going to kill me. They're going to taser me. They're going to kill me." And then they shot him in his home. And it was all recorded because of the medical alert box was still on. You know, so we're seeing a lot of these increasing cases of not only mental health issues, but also that the office, two of the officers that had killed Kenneth Chamberlain, well, one of them killed them, but two of the officers involved out of that team that went in there already are still dealing with a case of being two Muslim young brothers about a couple years before that, brutally. One of them almost died. So we're now seeing cops, not one time, but they're coming back on the force and they're killing again with impunity. You know, so as, you know, as we close out talking about the report, these are different ways to look at what's happening and a narrative that, I mean, everybody should want to care. But, you know, when you gender something, when you see an increase in women, when you see children, I mean,
right,
that's a huge trigger, right, you know, for our entire community.
Right, right. Jama, did you want to touch on that?
I think you touched on all the important points. If you get to the lives, human beings.
Hello?
Hello.
Okay, it went out for a second. I wanted to ask, I guess, a targeted question, and a lot of things are running in my mind right now is, you know, Rosa, you know, brought up that, you know, we're seeing children being, you know, killed, I think it was 12% of the cases, the people that were killed were under the age of 18. And this reminds me, you know, so much of, you know, 2010 with Ayanna Stanley Jones in Detroit, Michigan, and her murderer never did a day, you know, did a day in jail or prison, you know, for murdering that 7-year-old black girl. You know, my question is, what can communities and activists that are listening to the show, and I want to also say this, that you have Your World News' undying support. We're going to continue to support, and any time that you want to come on the program for an update, you have our platform. We're now up to 7,000 to 10,000 archive listens a week. So, you know, there's thousands of people that are tuning in, so it's going to be reaching it. So it's not the reach of the corporate media, the millions and millions, but that's, you know, 7,000 to 10,000 folks that are going to learn about this issue intimately. What can people that are listening, whether it's now live or on archive, what can they do to tangibly get involved in this and to help out?
I was going to let Adamo go ahead.
Yeah, there are things that MXG is calling for people to look at, perhaps trying to implement locally to address this issue. Of course, you know, you can attempt to organize a cop or a police watch where you can begin to put the police on notice that there are eyes and ears in the community watching how they relate to the community. And that requires, of course, that you organize yourself, you train yourself in the relevant laws, and you train yourself in terms of how you actually implement that kind of police watch. Connected to that is calling for the possibility of people organizing self-defense coalitions and campaigns so that people can understand what their rights are. People can understand what kind of power they have to basically protect their rights. And for people to come together in order to inform themselves of the range of human rights they have in their communities. So that requires that you learn about these rights. You know more about the laws that theoretically impact on your community. So it requires a certain kind of internal political education process. It's the report is also suggesting that folks might want to consider having a people's hearing or tribunal where you bring people together to talk about this issue of police force terrorism in your communities. And you can talk about what might be some of the creative responses from the community. So the report is calling on people to be as creative as possible. And it's based on the notion that it's going to be the communities themselves who are going to have the energy and the creativity to decide how to respond to this. MXG can make certain suggestions like is reflected in this report, but it's going to require the creativity of the communities. One of the other things that MXG is also helping to encourage is the creation of a structure that will help to develop a broader national plan of action, if you will, and we'll talk about that in a moment, but developing this National Alliance for Racial Justice and Human Rights, which would be a formation that will look at not only this issue of police violence and the devaluation of black life, but will look at how to develop a more comprehensive human rights agenda, if you will, that addresses all of the assaults that we have experienced in this country over the last few decades, you know, related to our ability to live dignified lives and for our communities to develop. So we say that if there's going to be a national plan of action, that plan of action has to be developed from the bottom up and has to reflect all of the interrelated needs that we have as a people and as communities in order to not just survive but also to develop and develop in freedom. So, you know, there's going to be constant dialogue. We are asking people to go to the website, download this report, read it, stay in contact with MXG, stay tuned to information around the National Alliance, and the constant message we always try to get across to people is that we've got to organize ourselves. That's the most effective weapon that we have.
Right.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I think some things are so easily implementable, whether it be training 10 people in your community or training your college campus group or in whatever kind of formation that you may be in that you may not think is political, especially for young people. You know, Malcolm X grassroots, we've been doing Know Your Rights workshops for over 15 years, you know. You know, now with social media, especially young folks always having a camera or video, you know, that's critically important. People need to know that that's an easy, implementable thing that you can do quickly in your community to empower your community to literally know your rights, to know when to for you to stand your ground, not in the way that they stood their ground against Trayvon, to literally know how many feet you have to be away and all of that, you know, because the Oscar Grant case to me was the first case where I actually saw a black man murdered on video like that, and that, you know, a young, and it was those young people and people who kept taping, but particularly them young people who taped that, you know. Who knows what the police would have said? Who knows what video cameras would have disappeared or whatever? Those are things that people could do right now. They don't have to wait for anybody but themselves to get their crews together and to organize. And especially, you know, those who love hip-hop and are part of the hip-hop generation, this is affecting our generation. You know, we're not going into a second, potential third generation of our people, young people, particularly black and brown, being massively incarcerated or being murdered, you know, and that's not exaggeration, that's what's happening. You know, so I'm kind of glad to see that the hip-hop community artists have already responded. Jasiri X has already dropped a song. He's dropping a video. You know, people like you, Solomon, with your book and the amazing work you're doing. I think that's important for people who love hip-hop, who are listening to this, to understand that if you love that culture, they're killing that culture by killing us. You know, and we have to have a political way to deal with that. But as the Jamu said at the end of the day, it's organize, organize, organize. And you can do it at a very micro level, and you can do it at a very macro level.
Right.
But there's no reason not to organize.
And I appreciate those words, Rosa and Jamu. The second to last question I had to ask is how can people, what can you give out the website? What is the contact information, you know, you're comfortable giving out if folks want to contact your media reps directly to try to bring you on their programs? Because we have a number of listeners. And my other question was, what can the international community do to get involved? Because we have quite a few listeners that are in the London area as well as Toronto, Canada, that listen religiously to the program. So, you know, what can they do to get involved, even though they're not within the U.S.?
I'll take the first part, and Adama can hit that second part. Anybody could go to the Malcolm X website. It's www.mxgm.org, mxgm.org. People can feel free to email me, and, in fact, that's something that the report has done. Every day I've been getting emails, or a researcher has been getting emails from someone that heard about a case that's not in the report. We've gotten, like, three particular cases around Latina police killings, and it's ClementeRose@gmail. My last name, my first name, no space, @gmail. Folks can follow me on Twitter. Our hashtag on Twitter is every40hours. We're really trying to get particularly the hip-hop community to really step up on that, on the Twittering and then Facebook, you know, and also Tumblr, which is a new platform that a lot of people, particularly internationally, are finding easier to use. So those are like all the social media ways that people can contact us. But if you know of a story that you don't see in this report, please, please definitely email us so we can continue to update this report.
Definitely. Jamu?
Right, right. And in terms of, well, two quick things that people can do immediately, well, one thing is to sign the petition. MXU has a petition that's circulating, and you have to be in the U.S. to, in fact, sign that petition. And that petition, of course, is online and at the same a website that Rosa just referred to. The other thing will be beyond that short term piece is they can email me, and I'll give that in a second, because what we need to do is to begin to move toward, you know, what I had mentioned, we're in the formation of a National Alliance for Racial Justice and Human Rights. We need to, and we are going to move toward creating an international alliance of Afro descendants for racial justice and human rights that will deal with the common issues that we are facing as African people in every location where you find us outside of the African continent. And we need to begin to strengthen our ability to communicate and coordinate among ourselves as we are moving toward developing a new human rights movement, and that is a human rights movement that recognizes capitalist globalization, patriarchy, white supremacy as enemies to human rights. So my email is Ajamu, A-J-A-M-U, Baraka, B-A-R-A-K-A, Ajamu Baraka, number 2, @gmail.com. Email me, and I can give you information on how we're moving toward developing this new formation that's connected to all of this. There's synergy here, you know, and we want to take advantage of the kind of energy that people have, the outrage that people are feeling, to push for a more effective organization.
Thank you. And I just want to, you know, before you know, I give you guys any closing comments that you want to put out there, I just want to thank you again for the work that you've done with this report, and as well as everybody that's involved in the Malcolm X grassroots movement. And I certainly will do everything I can. I have an interview tonight to discuss my book in on a radio station in North Carolina, and I promise that I will bring this up to their listeners so that they know, you know, what's going on and where to find this report and how to get involved. And you know, every opportunity I get a chance, I'm going to, you know, put the word out about this. But I also want to let you both know that this platform, this space here is unequivocally always open for you to come on this program to discuss this issue, this report, anything related to, you know, the liberation and emancipation of our people, you know, globally. So if there are any closing comments that you guys wanted to put out there, feel free.
I go first and let Rosa close it out because she does that so well. I just want to say that the one thing I want to say is that this report, as Rosa referred to it earlier, is really unique because there was no money, there's no big foundation supporting this effort. This was a fantastic example of what you do, whether it's will and necessity. And I really want to raise up a Malcolm X grassroots movement for the fact that putting this piece together in that way. And also to say that it's important to have that Malcolm X has raised this issue of action as part of the urban process. We didn't get a chance to talk much about that. But that's an important element that's been raised as part of this campaign.
Thank you, Rosa. Is Rosa still there?
Rosa. Well, I guess maybe she's not. I want to thank you, brother, for bringing us on. I mean, this has been a very important conversation.
No problem whatsoever. Let me see if I can maybe something. Okay, Rosa, can you
hear
us now?
Yeah. Okay. Hello.
Okay.
Hello.
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay. Yeah, it dropped and I called back. Okay. You know, I echo everything Ajamu has said. He's my mentor, my teacher. I learned so much from him. The human rights aspect, the international, global, Afro descendant aspect is critical, and it's work that I've been trying to put out there for a long, long time as a younger person within, you know, hip-hop. I think that's critical you know, that that's the way we organize. And as folks, you know, get caught up in the electoral political hype, you know, and someone that's a member of the Green Party, I would be remiss if I didn't let particularly younger folks understand that there is a party that actually would do something, would care about this issue, not and people have to really look at an administration, any administration that does not address this. What are they saying to you, particularly as a young person of color, maybe in an urban environment, a working class young person of color, a brother who every day has to deal with the harassment. You know, every day that also takes away people's humanity. So I just appreciate the opportunity for Solomon for bringing us on and being able to reach all your listeners. We really appreciate it, and we really want folks to go immediately online and sign that petition, download the report, and figure a way to fit in so we can do some work.
Definitely. Thank you guys so much for coming on. I look forward to having you guys on in the very near future.
Thank you, Solomon.
All right. Take care.
All right. Peace.
Thank you.
Peace. And with that being said, we're gonna let Malcolm X have the last word. And I just want to reiterate to everybody that this is so important. This was an impromptu program that we did. But I just felt that it was vastly important to get Rosa and Ajamo on to really expound upon the information that's within that, you know, 35-plus page report. I went through it, and it's you know, there's damning evidence that points towards a very widespread, systematic. I mean, we've known this for a long time, but it's, you know, it's well-documented reports like the one that Malcolm X Grassroots Movement just put out that, you know, make it, it's irrefutable, that make it irrefutable for even the most, you know, even the most mentally programmed and mentally obsequious, you know, American citizen, especially, you know, someone that that for a long time has really bought into, you know, this is the land of milk and honey. This is a place where justice reigns supreme. That is not the case. That is not the case. And as I said before, if this kind of stuff was happening in another country, especially a country with a lot of resources, if it was actually really, really happening, you know, the U.S. would be jumping up and down and saying, oh, we have to intervene. We have to intervene. You know, and so we look at what's happening here in the U.S. to black people, to African people in the U.S. And this is, you know, it's if it was any other country, you know, there would probably be sessions held at the United Nations. There would be sessions held, you know, saying, you know, what do we need to do to stop this onslaught, these systematic killings of black people? You know, what kind of resolutions need to be put out there? What kind of sanctions? What kind of protests? What kind of boycotts need to be placed on the U.S. economic system in order to get them to revamp their system of policing, to completely eradicate these extrajudicial, senseless, barbaric, racially motivated killings of black and brown people in America? So we have to take this report seriously. You have to get this report out to everyone you know. Post it on your Facebook. You know, as you know, I think Facebook is useful in terms of posting, you know, information and saying let's go ahead and start meeting here. But Facebook is not a substitute for, you know, for organizing or doing, you know, the solid face-to-face networking that needs to take place. You know, I've kind of just become a little jaded with Facebook and how many people just, you know, spend, you know, loads and loads of time of just posting, you know, images and so forth. But this is something that needs to be posted on Facebook. This is something that without a doubt needs to be posted on Facebook. Information needs to be posted on Facebook. It's a great venue to do so. And then when people read this information on your Facebook page, implore them, especially if the people are in your local area, implore them to come together and meet, you know, suggest a meeting time and a meeting place, and come together and, as Ajamu and Rosa said, start to come up with these creative solutions, you know, that need to be put in place in your local area to start protecting our communities, you know, through Know Your Rights campaigns and Cop Watch programs and those kind of things, and self-defense. Those are tangible things that can be done immediately. So, you know, once again, I just want to thank Rosa and Ajamu for coming on the program, and it's you know, and for the work that they and their comrades at Malcolm X Grassroots Movement have put together. And without further ado, this is Malcolm X, and discussing the hypocrisy of democracy in this nation. For Your World News, I'm Solomon.
But don't scare Negroes today with no badge or no white skin or no white sheet or no white anything else. The police the same way. They put their club upside your head and then turn around and accuse you of attacking them. Every case of police brutality against a Negro follows the same pattern. They attack you, bust you all upside your mouth, and then take you to court and charge you with assault. What kind of democracy is that? What kind of freedom is that? What kind of social or political system is it when a black man has no voice in court, has nothing on his side other than what the white man chooses to give him? My brothers and sisters, we have to put a stop to this. And it will never be stopped until we stop it ourselves. They attack the victim, and then the criminal who attacked the victim accuses the victim of attacking him.
Yes, sir.
This is American justice.
Yes, sir. That's right.
This is American democracy.
Yes, sir.
And those of you who are familiar with it,
yes, sir,
know that in America, democracy is hypocrisy.
Right, right.
Now, if I'm wrong, put me in jail.
Right.
But if you can't prove that a democracy is not hypocrisy, then don't put your hands on me.